All our crowds overseas.
No.
You're gonna have
to. Okay. All right. I need to talk. Yeah, I need to get a ship. I think you need someone to have a car. Just to
Oh, that's right. There's another
one. Yep. Yeah. I can say it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey.
Good to see you. How are your travels?
They are plentiful.
Yeah.
This much and that's
like
yeah.
Massive.
It seems like once February, that's kind of like everyone's back at a conference. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe I'll
go.
So
it's like, I'm not going to do it. Before just went to
the I went to a dispensary this morning. Everything was heart shaped, and I bought these beautiful cookies, and it was my plan is to take them home, but just eat them.
If you like them.
Via Zoom, and there are a few of them already, and just for the sake of maximizing our time, can you do that? We're gonna get underway. I'm gonna throw to Kurt. All I will say is that within moments, this great facility, and thank you, Hewlett Foundation, for hosting this third meeting. This great facility is going to be live mic'd. So these mics that are sticking out of the ceiling are gonna go hot, like within seconds. And what that means is great news is that everybody can hear everybody else. And the other side of the bad news is that everybody can hear everybody else. So if you think you're having a private conversation about something or someone, you won't be. And I guess that's a new definition of open.
Step out of the room.
Yeah. Open room.
Yeah. Well, it's so good of you all to join us for this session. We have a lot to do. We've done a lot. We have a lot of, I think, also really important work to get into now and in the months ahead. Hopefully you all have taken in some of the information that's been sent out in advance about the goals of this meeting, the agenda, and some of the backgrounders as well. Just to quickly recap, we'll spend about an hour kind of getting spooled back up, reacquainting ourselves with some of the background deliverables and bringing in, you know, a few of the folks who are joining us today for the first time. Then we'll spend the bulk of the afternoon kind of diving in more deeply into a set of what we expect will be six of the longer list of deliverables that we felt had the most engagement, the most momentum behind them coming out of past conversations, and then a really special dinner tonight, special presentation on deep fakes and other things having to do with truth. Looking forward to that very much. Tomorrow, really, really delighted to have Larry Kramer and Sanjay Sarma speak with us, have an open conversation about some of the bigger things that they have in mind that the work that we're doing could be connecting to, and then spend a bunch more time doing the more detailed work on some of the deliverables that we've been talking about. Thought we would kick off here with just a quick round of introductions. Many of us know many of us, but there's a few new faces. So if you could say your name, the affiliation that brings you here, the organization you're working with, and as an icebreaker, how about if you were one of the presidential candidates, which would you be? Who do you identify? Wow. Wow.
I don't know.
That'll be fantastic.
It doesn't have to be just U.S. Words.
That's right. Yeah, you can bring in somebody from outside.
Swiss.
Yeah. Swiss friends. We have a different political system. We're really we have a function there.
A function, yeah. Yeah.
Who'd like to begin?
My name is Jeff Ubois. I'm with John D. and Catherine T. McCarter Foundation affiliate called Lever for Change. And I'm working on how we can cause flows of information about projects that address global problems to be exchanged among funders and people that are working on projects. Also a longtime collaborator with Peter and a fan of the Knowledge Futures Group at MIT. And I was trying to fire this up in time to find the most offbeat weirdo presidential candidate that is not actually in my head based on what's been done before. So
that person.
Yeah.
Pass it on. So I'm Kathy Casserly. I realized I was confused when I came in because I went out and I got lunch and then I saw there was this lunch here for us. And so I think some old habits die. I was previously program officer here at the Hewlett Foundation. I helped launch the field of OER, so I held that inaugural portfolio. MIT OpenCourseWare was obviously one of our big grants at that time, and so it's nice to be revisiting with all the MIT folks and many other organizations that were funded early and continue to be big activists in many ways in the field. I am now an advisor to Hewlett Foundation and to other organizations. I have my own consulting strategy firm, and I also do executive leadership coaching. And that's a good question. So I'm going to say Elizabeth Warren.
I'm Claudio Aspesi. I may be the person who is least like anyone else in this room because I come from a very different background. I was a consultant at McKinsey in Chicago, New York for many years. After that, I was head of strategy in a music company and then a financial analyst covering European media. And that's how I started to run into the publishers like Elsevier, Pearson, etc. That led Spark to ask me to help out figuring out what's happening in data and data analytics today in the academic world. They're seeing the massive incursion of publishers into this area and the need to figure out what's happening. That has morphed into a set of actions to actually protect academia from the negative consequences of this incursion of commercial vendors in the academic world. And that's really the bulk of my work at the moment with Spark. And I'm here because Amy Brand at MIT Press asked me actually if I could think about a parallel piece of work that would help out think through some of the application of past experience into some of the future actions that the academic community should take. In terms of candidates, in Switzerland, we do not have presidents. We have a rotating head of state every year out of a very small government, 6 people. So it's hard to pick a presidential candidate. We don't have one. If I were a president, if I were to argue for a presidential candidate here, I would betray tribal loyalties. I would not be, pick Pete Buttigieg, even if he was a McKinsey associate in Chicago. You know what I really like, and I'll surprise you? It's Governor Weld. It takes a lot of courage today to go against the grain of your party and stand up for what you really believe. And Weld got about 9% of the vote, 10% of the vote in New Hampshire. Obviously, Trump got 85%. He knew he had not a chance, but it doesn't matter. He made a very important statement about the fact that the world should, that you should uphold what you believe in.
Hi, everybody. I'm Hal Plotkin. I'm one of the people Kathy Casserly launched.
all those years ago. I've had a number of affiliations in the field, as some of you know. I'm presently a consultant to a French foundation with a very long name that is working on an Erasmus-funded project to pioneer open for-credit assessments on the European continent. Oh, a presidential candidate. I would be Robert F. Kennedy, if I could choose.
I'm Nick Lindsay. I'm the director for Journalist Open Access at the MIT Press. So I run the journals program there, and I'm also responsible for OA efforts on both the books and journals side. I've never been to this meeting before, so I'm really looking forward to it. Amy Brand is my boss, and she couldn't make it this time, but she really encouraged me to go, and I'm very glad that she did. I'm Canadian. I don't want to be any of the presidential candidates, so I'll just say Justin Trudeau, and that would be my
I'm Jamie Mathewson. I'm the director of partnerships at Wiki Education. We work to improve Wikipedia, and I can talk to various people about some of the projects we work on. I'm also new to this meeting, so looking forward to learning, catching up on everything you've done so far. And I would boldly say Elizabeth Warren, though. I would be so lucky.
I'm Peter Kaufman. I work at MIT Open Learning. I'm fortunate to be able to work on strategic initiatives there with Sanjay and Tom Smith and Kurt and others. And I also work at MIT's Knowledge Futures Group with Amy Brand and our colleagues. If Eugene Debs isn't running anymore, and Shirley Chisholm isn't either, so I guess I'm a Bernie bro. I don't know what the hand gesture is that's supposed to go along with that, but I would make it if I knew.
I'm Kurt Newton. I am director at MIT OpenCourseWare, a project I've worked on for 16 years, almost from the beginning, and really honored to get to do that work. I also do a tremendous amount of climate change work, and I'm personally really interested in expanding the ways that engaging the world and doing education on that topic can intersect with the work that we're doing here today. And in that spirit, if I would be Jay Inslee. Remember him?
Good. Hi, everybody. James Glapa-Grossbach. I'm an academic dean at College of the Canyons in Southern California, which is one of the 114 California community colleges, one of the 1,100 community colleges in the U.S. For the past couple of years, I've been working to support California community colleges to develop Z degrees or entire degree pathways built around OER. And if I were a presidential candidate, I probably wouldn't be running this year. But I'll channel my two teenage boys, because I think it's kind of interesting. They're both big supporters of Andrew Yang. He resonates with my teenage boys, so I don't know what that means, but I'm struck by it. Happy to be here.
I'm Willem van Valkenburg. I work for Delft University of Technology in the Netherlands. My current job is Executive Director of the Extension School, and I'm President of Open Education Global. Many know it, Open Education Consortium. And we don't do presidents candidates. I see it more as a comedy than as real politics. What's going on?
Yep. Ouch. My name is Ryan Erickson Kulas. I'm a program officer with the Michelson 20mm Foundation. I work in our textbook affordability initiative, so very heavily involved in open educational resources. I also oversee one of our grant giving programs. In terms of my presidential candidate, I guess I would say, as someone who grew up on the West Wing, Jed Bartlett.
Hi, I'm Lisa Petrides, and I know most of you here, so I'm going to talk to the people I don't know down there. I run Institute for the Study of Knowledge Management and Education, otherwise known as ISKME. And we have been working in the OER space as researchers, as librarians, as technical infrastructure and professional development since almost the beginning. I think I was one of the first funders also. Thank you, Kathy. You might know us by OER Commons, which is the main library that we run, although we run about 20 other OER libraries for other states and consortium organizations. And well, just to show that I'm still suffering from PTSD, I guess I would probably be Hillary Clinton. And if we had to get more current, then I would probably say Kamala Harris, which you can see I'm batting 0-2. So I think we'll sit this one out for a minute.
Doesn't mean you're wrong.
That's right.
But right doesn't get you there.
Unfortunately. Hi, everybody. My name's Cable Green. I'm currently the interim CEO of Creative Commons. When we get a new CEO, I'll go back to my day job, which I'm also still doing, which is being the director of open education at Creative Commons. So if anybody knows of good CEO candidates, we are looking. We have an open, active search, so please spread the word. I think everybody knows Creative Commons. I won't talk about that. And I don't really want to pick a candidate. I'll just say that I'm a concerned Democrat. Leave it at that.
You look concerned.
Hi, I'm Norman Beer. I'm at Carnegie Mellon University, two different jobs. I am lucky to direct the Open Learning Initiative. OLI is one of the ships that Kathy launched, where we build open courseware that engages in research and tries to close that loop around improving student outcomes. I'm also the executive director of the Simon Initiative. CMU doesn't have a college of education, and the Simon Initiative tries to provide an umbrella over all of the stuff that we do around learning science and ed tech and data. And it's given me an interesting platform to try to pull a larger part of the campus community into the open space. So not just looking at open education, but open science, open data, and open sourcing a lot of these tools. So it's been fun to make those connections. I'm still scarred from the last presidential election. My children are still scarred. So, and I wouldn't run for president because I just don't have the ego for it. So I'm going to sit this one out. Well.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Tanya Spillavoy. I work for the Western Interstate Commission for Higher Education, or WICHE. I'm the director of open policy. My current position is to work with the four regional compacts in the United States. There's SREB, which is the Southern Region States, NEVI, the New England States, MEC, which is the Midwestern States, there's 12 there, and then WICHE has 16 and associated territories, some really cool places in the Marianas Islands. And the people who sit on the WICHE or the compact boards are gubernatorially appointed representatives from states. So you have representatives who sit on those boards, and they make policy decisions. And a lot of the times, those are the people who are signing off on all kinds of contracts in their states. And sometimes they don't know exactly what they're signing. So what we're working on currently is to bring open education to the compacts, because these people have incredible power, and they also have this amazing ability to bring states together to make decisions. And I'm sort of at the apex of this work. So I'm working with all the four regional compacts, and things are going amazing. There's a huge movement in the MEC region, all 12 states. And NEVI had just had a big OER board meeting. Never happened before. So we're working rather quickly toward the goal of bringing a lot more great OER policy, open policy, to the high-level policymakers at the regional compact level. There's only been two times, I just have to say one more thing. There's only been two times in the history of ever that the regional compacts have come together around a topic. They usually work separately in their own regions. The first time was with the SARA agreement, the State Authorization Reciprocity Agreement, and I helped them work on that. Now they're working on open. These are the only two policies that the compacts have worked on. Anyway, we need everybody, so thank you. I would not run for anything presidential. I would be Pedro. Vote for Pedro, that's all I got.
Hi everyone, I'm Richard Sebastian. I'm the Director of Open and Digital Learning at Achieving the Dream. If you're not familiar with Achieving the Dream, we're a nonprofit based in Maryland. We work with community colleges across the country to improve outcomes for community college students, including using OER to improve classroom practice and reduce costs for students. For the past, it's hard to believe, almost four years, I've run the OER Degree Initiative, which we're just wrapping up, and we have a big report coming out. It's really good news. Happy to talk to you about it more. And I'm gonna back Hal when he jumps into the race. that's my guy this time around.
Hi everyone, I'm Angela DeBarger, Program Officer here at the Hewlett Foundation. I work with all of our teams focused on open education and OER. I'm one of three program officers and we have a director as well, so we're a pretty small team. And it's something we've been working on is how to collaborate more. So a lot of conversations emerging around connections between the portfolios, our work that's traditionally been OER and then also K-12 teaching and learning. Let's see, I've been here also 3 years and almost going on my third year. So it's been really a great opportunity. Let's see, in terms of candidates, I think I've got to go with Kamala, at least, you know.
My name is Nathan Huttner. I'm a partner at Redstone Strategy Group. We advise foundations and nonprofits on strategy and implementation. I've been working on OER for almost 10 years now, off and on with the Hewlett Foundation. We've also worked with Achieving the Dream and others that in the K-12 arena that are producing high quality open textbooks. If I had to be a presidential candidate, I really admired Leon Castro in that he ran a really great campaign that was focused on a lot of issues that no one else was paying attention to, and then backed the smartest woman in the race when he realized he could do it. That's what I would aspire to do if I were in the race.
Hi, I'm Maria Dora. I'm an analyst at Redstone. Most of my practice has been in environmental sectors as well as education. I've had the chance to work with Castle and really appreciate the opportunity to now work on OER. And I am a concerned Democrat who cares a lot about climate change.
I'm Rachel Cower. I'm a project manager at Redstone. I've had the chance to work on OER with Angela and the Hewlett Foundation, as well as some of the other folks that Nathan mentioned, both in K-12 and higher ed. And as far as presidential candidate, seeing as I would desire to not be one, I'll happily take any of the very smart and qualified people who have thus far dropped out.
On the phone or on the Zoom, let's see. Might have to run up. This is a brand new Zoom system. This is, as I understand it, the first time it's being used here.
It could very well be.
Yeah. So go around, I think, here as the host. I can go around and unmute people. Oh, it's like Amy. You're unmuted. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Amy Brand. I'm the director of the MIT Press and founder with a bunch of other folks at MIT of the Knowledge Futures Group, working with Peter and others. And, you know, Peter and I are both really interested in looking at the relationship between open learning at MIT and other efforts around open knowledge. And that's how I got connected up to this project.
Thank you.
Presidential candidate? Oh, yeah. You know, the thing that came to mind is I would love to be Larry David impersonating Bernie. Oh, yeah. He does that so well, but yeah.
That seems good. Deb, you ready?
Sure. I'm Deb Adair. I'm the Executive Director of Quality Matters, and I'm grateful to be able to at least remote in and participate as I can. And why am I here? Well, we work with a little over 1,200 academic institutions, mostly higher ed and K-12, and many of them, and many of them that work at the consortia level have OER projects, and they continue to look at us, knock on our door, and ask us to figure out the quality question regarding OER. And I think I'm as much looking for the definition of the quality question as we are, you know, being a resource for them writ large. And so that's really why I'm here. The gosh, that was an awful thing to do, to ask us to be to pick a candidate. So I'll just say I am 100% behind any warm body that will stand up to the current president.
That's great. No, get to share. Ross is on.
Hi, my name is Ross Mounts. Can you hear me? I'm the director of Open Access Programs at Arcadia Fund. There's lots of my grantees in the room, MIT Press, Creative Commons. We fund Internet Archive, New York Public Library, things like that. Very much interested in open access. UK is not so good at the moment, so I'm not going to make any jokes about US politics. But I'm looking through the list of actors who have played POTUS before, and I'm going to go for Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, that sounds good. And there's one more person on the call. Don't see a name. You're 415-694-1628.
But you're more than a number. That might be just of our test.
Might be. Yeah. California number. Yeah. Okay, well, I'll close it out. I'm Yvonne Ng with MIT Open Learning, where I work on sustainability and stewardship. I'm so happy to support the goals of this working group. If I had to choose a candidate, I'd go with Pete Buttigieg.
Thanks. Yeah.
All right. Well, welcome everybody. So next, I think we wanted to just do a broad brush update on the deliverables that we had been sorting through at the end of the last meeting, and how we got to this set of six a little bit.
Yeah, I have one general.
Go for it.
One general remark. As we can see from just the answers to Kurt's question about how to self-identify with the presidential candidate from like RFK to Larry David, we clearly are a bunch of people who think way outside the box, and that's an amazingly fortunate thing. I think over the next couple days, we're going to be pulled in two different directions. One direction is toward the practical, which is where our Redstone friends come in, our taskmasters. Yes, you guys. Their previous engagements included several successful assignments during the Spanish Inquisition. I think we're going to be encouraged to resolve to conclusion in extraordinarily sophisticated ways that Redstone will take us through some of the deliverable conversations that we've started, some of the work that we've advanced to actually seeing a finish line for some of these. And there are seven others that we've identified, and probably a whole lot more that will come up. So one direction is the practical, and the other is the aspirational, as we will hear from Larry and Sanjay tomorrow. And it seems like these are these are energies like that are going in two different directions. One, you know, is like defining like new experiments around CC BY licensing a course on linear algebra by one university, or a data set of photos from a museum for Wikipedia, or a set of new requirements for a chapter or a whole book teaching seventh graders geography. And the other is to take on 30, 40, 70 years of the dominant intellectual paradigm in political economy and imagine ways of changing it on a global scale and on a timeline that is over three or four decades as well, and not months or semesters. So I just would want to suggest that it may be that these energies are actually energies that are moving in the same direction. And it may be that the energy that open needs now, or that open could benefit from, is actually energy that open helped to start. It's the energy that is coming, kind of radiating from the allied groups that are tackling some of the same big problems of equity and freedom and justice that James and his group especially think about, but Kurt just mentioned as well, and that we're all somewhat involved in, and you know, some of the other energies that we're going to be hearing, I think, you know, at a significant decibel level about tomorrow. So I just think that's a fortunate thing, and so we're super grateful for the Hewlett Foundation support of this meeting and your hospitality and the chicken and the codfish. And the, it was great. So thank you very much. I just wanted to say that.
So just posted up here the six topics from our list of deliverables that we've been working on previously.
Hey folks, yeah. Sorry to interrupt, but Diana Wu would like to introduce herself.
Please.
Hi. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, welcome.
Hi. Sorry about that. I actually heard all of you, but I was on, you couldn't hear me. So sorry for interrupting and speaking up late, but just wanted to quickly introduce myself. I'm Diana Wu. I'm the Dean of UC Berkeley Extension, and I was the founding Dean of Berkeley's online learning center. It's now called Digital Learning Services, is now on the main campus. I'm also the founding dean of the New Academic Ventures Unit at Berkeley. And I think I am probably the least informed, most ignorant person in this group. I'm so impressed and intimidated hearing all of your introductions. And I will do my best to represent Berkeley, but I may be pulling in some colleague reinforcements. For example, Jeff Mackey-Mason, some of you may know him from his Elsevier work. I am also, presidential candidate, probably Kamala, but unfortunately, maybe in 4 years, right? So, okay.
Yep.
Thank you, Peter.
So, are you trying to change our presidential affiliation?
There we go. That's what I'm trying to say. Hopefully people are familiar with the long list of deliverables that we've been talking about before. We've been sharing this out with people. There were 13 that we came out of the last meeting with. Some of them seem to have more sort of more energy on them than others. So for the purposes of kind of focusing our work today, the goal was to select a subset that seemed most productive to dive in on and work through in a series of breakout conversations, how we can make progress on these things. This all seems familiar to people.
Yep.
So the list that we are so there's this set of six just here.
I think we were moving to presentations by deliverable leads, and I don't know, Rachel, Nathan, Maria, if you want to if you want to MC these initial short capsule presentations about the deliverables from six different deliverable groups.
Sure.
Thanks.
So as Peter mentioned earlier, we worked to identify a few of these deliverables that seemed, we felt like they had some energy and momentum behind them. So I think that we successfully warned all the folks who are leads on those deliverables that we'd love to just hear a little bit about what folks see as the goal of the deliverable, what you're excited to achieve today, what the current status is. I'm happy to just sort of get that rolling. So I'd say I think the first one on the list is establishing a declaration of principles for winning in open education. I think Cable, if you want to kick us off.
We had said 3 minutes, but we're running ahead of schedule,
yeah.
So you can have five.
quick question. Is that document, the deliverables document, linked to the wiki? Or?
Yes, that's the one that is linked to it.
I don't know if it's linked to the wiki. Is it linked to our wiki?
It's right on the agenda.
Yeah, I linked it to the wiki.
Okay.
It's the one that's linked.
Thanks. We're ahead of ourselves. Oh, there it is.
So five minutes? Okay. let's see what ended the 5 minutes. So the big idea, so this was an idea that we discussed at the Maryland meeting, the last meeting. The big idea here is that there are lots of leaders, lots of nonprofit NGOs around the world that are working on open education. We've had lots of documents over the years. We've got organizations. Everybody's got a lot of people working on this. Hewlett's made a huge investment in this sector. And I would say that we share a lot of the same end state goals and desires for what we'd like to see in the transformation of education vis-a-vis open. And I think there's a lot of agreement about what some of those general areas are around open content or OER, open practices, open education practices, and open policies. And we oftentimes work with each other on those things. And yet we don't, there isn't a document, there isn't a single declaration of principles where we have collectively had a conversation and come together and said, This is the end state that we're shooting for. So some might argue that that's not a good idea, which is absolutely fair to debate. I would say that I don't particularly like the word winning in open education because it implies somebody has to lose. So I think what I'm trying to be clear, what I'm really trying to do here is lay out a draft that would be to try to get some common goals and agreement around what we're shooting for an end state in open education, at least those across those three areas, content, policy, and practices. Since I only have 5 minutes, if we had that, then if we know what the end goal is, then I think the next step is to do a landscape analysis of where we are. And we have, again, a lot of those. Hewlett does those. Hewlett funds a lot of those activities. There are landscape analyses all around the world in different areas because, of course, different countries, different regions have different opportunities and different states of their existing state. So it's good to know where you are. It's good to know where you're going. And then, of course, the third step is how do we get from where we are to where we want to go? And so this document, I've tried to lay out some of those components to suggest how we might do those three things. If we could do those three things, and if there was a map of where from how to get to where we are today to ideal state in open education, that's interesting because it creates some obvious points for collaboration. It creates a guide
guiding a useful map for foundations and governments and other funders to put money against that roadmap. It allows us as NGOs and other open leaders to work together, not duplicate efforts, to see where the big challenges are that require all of us at the same time, versus where we can diversify and handle multiple parts of this step ladder at simultaneously. So that's the idea. I'm probably already out of 5 minutes.
You got it.
Okay, I know. I'll stop.
I was going to say 10 seconds. But
I will yield my 10 seconds to the senator from California.
So I should just say one more thing, which is that as you all are listening to these, what we're going to move into next is invite people to break up into working groups on these deliverables. So be thinking about which one of these you might want to be working on in this afternoon session. I think, Cable, you said everything I think you need to say to make your deliverable compelling, but with that context, if there's anything else you want to add.
Just one last point.
Yeah.
And that is that as an example of what I mean by this, we're actually doing some of this already with the UNESCO OER recommendation, and many of the orgs that are in the room are already collaborating in a network working with UNESCO to work together to figure out how are we going to help national governments do the landscape analysis, find out where their opportunities are for implementing different parts of the UNESCO OER recommendation, which if you're not familiar with that, it recently passed unanimously, and it is a set of recommendations for national governments on how they can support open education in their countries. I don't know how many NGOs do we have, probably 15 plus now, have aligned, and you'll see in the document the list of actions that we intend to do and why. Actually, we don't have I don't have our services listed, but I can add those as well. But the why is important to show, you know, that we're not duplicating efforts, to show that we're being efficient and impactful, et cetera. But this, our existing effort is very focused just on the UNESCO OER recommendation and the implementation of it, which is hugely important, and it's global, and it's going to take 5 or 10 years to get that piece done. This is the bigger analysis. This is saying for open education writ large, what do we want?
So I think the next thing on our list, and I think Cable, you actually may be on call for this one as well. You can stop me if that's not true. For the sustainable open education goals for the UN. Sustainable Development Goals, which I think, unless there's somebody else who wants to speak to that option.
So this one, we talked a bit about in email. I think Peter's idea of this was different than mine, which is totally fine. So I back away from this one. Because, Peter, say what you were thinking about for this one.
I was going to ask you to say what you were thinking about. No, but I was thinking about this in large part as an opportunity to, in the same way as we'll hear tomorrow from the foundation president about the success of the neoliberal funding agenda and the need not to mimic it, but to learn from all of the moves that funders over the past decades have engaged in and try to envision a set of pathways for, in some fashion, mirroring that success on the other side. So like these sustainable development goals, not being nefarious, but being completely inspirational, have taken the world sort of by imagination. When Greta came over, I think there were 17 boats that went out into the harbor to greet her, each representing a sustainable development goal. If you look at the chart that the UN has published, there are, it's almost like a Creative Commons logo, like it's, there are 17 beautiful, it's like a periodic table of saving the planet.
And so it's a marketing tool that I thought was inspirational. If we were to pick like what our 17 sustainable goals are for open education, or 15 or 7 or 2, whatever it is, like, could we imagine crafting a set of messages that is so equally captivating, politically successful, that the media could latch onto that? And interestingly enough, this ties into another deliverable that was on the original, or this version of this deliverable ties into another deliverable that's really all about how do we use the media at our disposal to more systematically promote open among all of the constituencies that matter. So in essence, I was thinking of it as a formal model for how we communicate possibly some of this in deliverable one, and possibly some of the other things that we have on our list and that we'll talk about. But you had what I thought was a persuasive vision as well, and we shouldn't drop it. So I hope you'll speak to it.
Yeah, so whereas I think you were talking about the design elements of how we might do it. I was thinking more along the lines of what, so if you look at the SDGs, they're the big global challenges of the day, right? We need clean water, we need to solve climate change. We still have gender inequality everywhere. There's like, they're the big problems of the day. And I left my slides that I've created for this in the document. I was more thinking along the lines of how can open education help address those problems. So for example, every country in the world has signed on to the SDGs. They're all gonna need educational materials about the SDGs to educate their population. Why not have all that be OER? There have been some discussions about setting up SDG universities where you don't get a degree in chemistry, you get a degree in clean water, and you minor in chemistry. Or you get a degree in SDG 4 in education, and you minor in sociology or whatever. But the idea there is that you're focusing the world, or you're focusing students' learning and their degrees, and then hopefully their careers against the SDGs rather than just some vague discipline. And one of the hopes when President Obama was in, one of the hopes that the Office of Science, Technology, and Policy had, when Tom Khalil was on point, was that his words, not mine, the best and brightest of graduate students would make this their career as opposed to going to Wall Street to make a bunch of money or Silicon Valley. No offense, Silicon Valley. But, Tom was interested in how do we get people to make their career in clean water?
Yep.
Because we need great minds to solve those problems. My background is education psychology, and so I'm particularly interested in how do you give students and learners opportunities that are the work that Norm does at OLI, so that are authentic and they're meaningful, because we know that when you put learners in those situations, they learn more deeply and they're more enthusiastic when they're doing something that actually matters. And nothing matters more than the SDGs on the planet today. And so why not make their curriculum about that? So that I had a very different angle on this.
So when I hear you talking about it now, I would like to act like a candidate and immediately withdraw from the race and say that is much more persuasive as a deliverable to me than whatever gobbledygook I was yet. But I know that Kurt, we've talked also about MIT's activity and some of these.
Yeah, this will show up in when I talk about the case study in the future of MIT OpenCourseWare 10 years out. But there's real serious work beginning and a lot of motivation to frame not only the curriculum, but also the way that we talk about this stuff with the world at large around these 17 goals, very much in the spirit of what Cable's been talking about.
I mean, if we could frame like an OER curriculum and other R's in the OER that are, including involving publishers, including involving teachers, including involving librarians, and others. Like, wouldn't that be a great, isn't that the best deliverable yet? I mean, I guess we're not supposed to rank these deliverables, but.
This is a great conversation. I suggest we litigate it by assigning people to the breakout rooms. We can sort of figure that out. But James, do you want to?
Good.
Go ahead.
Next. So on the list, on the wiki, I think the title of our group got transposed a little bit in the note taking. So I came up with a real pithy short title to represent the idea that we created, and that is landscape analysis of organizations and communities of practice that are pursuing similar goals and could be allies. I'll look at my fellow group members, Angela and Richard, when we were in Maryland. We, on the one hand, we're really excited to see great progress in OER, narrowly defined. And yet we were a bit frustrated at the diversity of voices and perspectives in the larger conversation. So we were thinking about how could we expand the voices and perspectives, and I think it struck us that we really are operating or trying to pursue larger goals, and we have seen in many ways a statement of open and OER as a tool to achieve larger goals. So we enunciated those or declared them roughly as economic justice, cultural diversity, social inclusion, you know, the larger pictures. And we wondered how could we learn from others who are pursuing similar goals, and could they learn something from us? So I think I said, for example, if you're going to a conference on tackling racism in education, the achievement gap, or if you're talking about hunger and homelessness amongst America's youth, OER might very well not be on the table. It might not be part of the discussion. So could other organizations learn from us? And certainly, what could we learn from other organizations? So with both sort of a aspiration and humility, I think we came up with some goals to conduct a landscape analysis of other organizations that are broadly involved in what we term social justice work, economic equity, social inclusion, cultural diversity, so that we can reach out to them ultimately to learn from them and perhaps have them learn something from us. Is that a fair statement? Looking at Richard and Angela. And also we should say Philip Schmidt chimed in, and he wasn't there physically, but he's been participating with us via email. And Nicole Allen as well wanted to join the idea and supported the idea. And we do have some open questions, though. We agreed on a sort of general statement of what we want to undertake, but we do have some open questions in fairness. And I want to give credit to Philip, who prodded us to think about whether we want to be a T-shirt or a hashtag. So do we want to infuse existing communities with the benefits of open education, meaning a hashtag open ed, and other organizations can advertise that? Or do we want to be the movement that other organizations join and identify with, thereby having the t-shirt? Of course, Creative Commons has awesome t-shirts, so maybe that concept has already been taken. Angela, Richard, is that fair?
I think we could add, or do we want to do both?
We want it all.
T-shirt with a hashtag.
There we go, yeah. Great.
Claudio, do you want to talk about the case studies?
Yes. As I said earlier, Spark has been working for the past year and a half on the whole issue of how data analytics are affecting and are likely to affect going forward all facets of academic life, both on the student side as well as on the research side and on the teaching activities. We outlined in a document that we published at the end of November last year a set of very practical actions that need to be taken by the academic community if it wants to minimize the very significant risks posed by the ownership of all these data analytic tools by a set of commercial vendors, which have goals that are
either indifferent to the needs of the academic community or in conflict with the needs of the academic community. And one of the three families of actions that we recommend has to do with the fact that some set of actions are so vast in terms of resources needed and mobilization within the academic community necessary to achieve those goals that no single academic institution can be asked realistically to take it on by itself. So what we need is to figure out how to make a set of institutions which tend to be, as seen from the outside, somewhat anarchical even inside, and even more anarchical when you put several of them in one room, work together in a way that's functional. Because contrary to the corporate world where I could, you know, if I were the CEO of data analytics protection for the academic world, in a business sense, I would just say, Peter, you're in charge. Now go out to develop a business plan and hire the people. And come back and tell me what you're doing. It doesn't work that way. You need to build up consensus from the ground up. You need to learn at the same time how to make this work. There's a set of past experiences. Not many of them work particularly well, but some have not. And as Amy pointed out, Amy Brand pointed out, there's very little knowledge, institutional knowledge, of what did and what did not work and why. And if in fact we can go back and revisit those experiences, and with the benefit of insight and time spent and time passed, can we draw lessons that help next time around to develop initiatives that are better focused, better managed, have better governance systems, better goals, that will increase the odds that next time around they will be able to work. And so this is a building block that is very important because it addresses very practical issues around how to make things happen in a very concrete way. Now, Peter's point, this is just part of a much broader set of issues. I don't want to minimize the fact that this is not just an exercise. I don't want to make this sound just like an exercise in understanding some past experience. This has to be in the context of the fact that probably change will take decades, that ultimately there may be a need for a paradigm shift. But you cannot wait for revolution. Lives of students are affected today. Lives of researchers are affected today. And every year that goes by, things will only get more difficult to change. And so taking action, even if this set of action is incremental, and it's not about destroying the machine as it works now, but even improving the machine today has very concrete impact on the lives of hundreds of thousands of students and researchers, both in this country and around the world. And it's quite important to take those steps. Hence the need to start to build additional knowledge to increase the odds of success. You're dealing with a set of very organized commercial vendors on the other side of every negotiation, of every tool that you deploy. They have a massive information advantage over you collectively, and you need to organize for them.
We do have a structure that is organized within the United States, at least in the United States, that could support your concept. So states are organized into higher education SHIO policy units, like each state has its own policy unit that governs all public universities and even some of the privates. And then those SHIO units all belong to the compacts. And so within what you're talking about is a structure in the United States that would support it if they knew. So, right? So if they knew that all of you existed and what you do and who you are and what you can provide, they could make all of that happen. It's just that sometimes they don't even know where to look. I think there's a gap in knowledge. We were talking in the Uber on the way over here. What's the first thing you tell a new OER person at an institution? You say, go on Twitter, and then you follow me, and then you follow everybody I follow. And then you can just kind of like comb through all of that. And there's this organization over here and over here, and they can help you with this. But you learn it organically because you're really looking for that information, and there isn't sort of like a central place for people to find information. So if the structure could meet OER, all of that could be more centralized and accessible and work in a more systematic way to combat what you were talking about, which is a very organized, systematic structure that goes in and, I mean, they've got a plan, they know who they're gonna talk to, and they can get there before we can. So part of it, I think, is just us meeting them, right? So the people who are making the decisions in those rooms, at the SHIO office, at the state level, at the multi-state level, and then they need to know who you all are. That's what would be a very powerful action.
We should definitely talk offline and, yeah. and talk about how we
right.
get the
so,
work in front of all of you.
So Tanya, I think if you join that working group,
yeah.
then
that's
certainly
exactly
a place to continue the conversation.
I also work for Spark. I'm the open education instructor for your Spark leadership program. And I was a co-designer with Nicole for that program. So we're a team.
Excellent. Kurt and Peter, do you want to talk about the experiments for free licenses?
Yeah. The way we've been thinking here, maybe a couple of threads within this. One is to compile and be able to share out or promote case studies of what exactly free culture licenses have been able to enable. So that's the CC BY, that's the BY SA, that's the public domain. As a way of, you know, using stories to explain to people who haven't quite gotten it yet why this is so important out there. What kinds of things does this enable? And in particular, you know, recognizing that historically, you know, there are some cohorts that really got attached to the non-commercial license clause and continue to publish stuff in that vein. And so to give them something to hold on to and understand that it might be okay, the things that they were afraid of that to hold to the NC license, there might be all these other things that could be gained that in the grand scheme of things are really, really, really important. So I guess just a series of case studies, things that have happened in the world over the past two decades. We have real data about this now, you know, as opposed to all kinds of sort of hypothetical or imagined things that maybe could happen back a couple of decades ago.
Yeah, and just relating it to Claudio's last intervention, like the, I know Amy and I have gotten a chance to have a sneak preview of a persuasive slide deck that Claudio, you've created for this deliverable. And at the Knowledge Futures Group in Cambridge, there is a kind of, I don't know, doctrinal alignment or still some debate around it over the concept of that, you know, the struggle for the control of information is A, or the defining struggle of our time. And when you look at the field of information and media today, the fact is that so many things that matter to us are controlled in their distribution, also in their production, in their marketing, by consortia that, or companies, organizations that we, as educators, let's say, or as foundations, or as not-for-profit publishers, or other roles that we have here, we don't control. And so one of the, you know, sort of things that I'm mindful of whom I'm sitting next to from WikiEDU and the 6 hours that I spent with your colleague yesterday driving up and back to Sonoma is Wikipedia is one such platform
that is not outside of our control. It actually is under the control of all of us. And so too other platforms that are part of the commons. So if we could successfully experiment with key, once we assemble the stories of successes, like the Metropolitan Museum working with changing its license and the skyrocketing attention to images from the Met that that was paid because those images found their way into Wikipedia, we could, I think, identify experiments to engage in with some cornerstone pieces of OER or ER or R that we can get people to work with us on and attempt to contribute them to the to the commons again, which is our common platform.
Yeah, it would be I think really helpful if we could develop a sense of where a few of the most high impact targets for this, you know, for this increased information would be, whether it's pockets within the wiki space, topics within open textbook platforms that haven't gotten enough attention. Mm-hmm. I know we might ourselves and in our networks actually have some really interesting ideas for places where there are gaps, and if we could direct some of these experiments towards getting into those gaps and seeing what could be developed.
Yeah,
this feels really promising.
I won't do it justice, but someone tweeted out from, I forget which publishing company, about the coronavirus as indicating that, you know, their company, what was it, Elsevier, I don't know who, would be sharing now under a free license, you know, all of the articles about the coronavirus, you know, and they listed some number, like all 47 articles, and you know, forget about that. Like, people looked and there are like 5,000 articles that are not shareable and accessible under these licenses that, you know, Kurt is talking about and Cable and others here know so well. And that's not right. That's not so good. I don't know, today. Might've been okay 50 years ago when all you had was paper and trucks and what have you, but now it's different. So it's that kind of thing.
Great. And I think that takes us to the last one of these potential deliverables, which is the future of MIT OpenCourseWare.
As you know, as one example of many projects within the space, of course, you know, just to take, you know, that specific corpus of knowledge and processes and stuff and project it forward 10 years to tell the story, what it looks like then, what have we achieved, you know, looking back on what were some of the key decisions that we might have made, again, as a tool of engagement for all the other people who we might want to reach with this sort of information. You know, how did we go about, you know, going way next level on making knowledge more accessible to some of the communities that don't really feel like they've had it yet? How do we develop the capacity in those communities to actually make use of this information? It's not enough anymore to just simply build it and hope that they'll come. You know, I think some of the lessons that we've been learning the last few years in the open ed space about how important it is to create support resources for OER creators and adopters and remixers. It's not enough to just put the stuff up and hope people will come to it. There's this, it real, like, feels like a really deep investment in the communities that practice around that. So in 2030, how did we make it so fantastic? You know, what did we do over the last 10 years to bring that about? You know, we might choose to weave in a few other things that we've been talking about for where MIT OCW might be going, you know, to really boost the standing of open pedagogy and student contributions, and also just community co-creation of the materials that are in this collection. And definitely
not least, the last thing I'd say is 2030 is the end of the initial phase of the UN SDGs, and we did amazing work in directing MIT OCW and its cohort, you know, towards building the knowledge that allowed us to make real progress against those SDGs.
Yeah.
That's the kind of outline I'd love to be able to roll out. But it's, as you can, I think, get a sense, it's drawing on a bunch of the themes from these other groups and conversations we've been having.
David Wiley, who has been an inspiration to a lot of us in this room and who should be in this room, I guess parts of him are in this room. David wrote this incredible essay, which is like a Jonathan Swift type piece that, as he calls it, is an excerpt from a longer chapter in my autobiography written in 2045, note to the reader, about the history of open education. And he pretends to look back on, you know, all of the things that we did right and did wrong. So that's 2045, which is far away, but maybe we need an open 2030 working group to come out of here, just some focus really on the next 10 years and what, looking back, as Kurt says, from 2030, we would want to see launched today.
Thank you, everybody. I think our next plan was to sort of break out into groups and take some time to think about these deliverables. Just quickly, do folks, by show of hands, do you feel like you know what deliverable you're excited to work on? Do folks feel like they have a sense of where they want to go?
Do we have to choose only one?
Yeah, that's probably.
At least for this afternoon, yes, but we can
yeah.
potentially remix later, either today or tomorrow.
Does that feel achievable to folks? Are people willing to commit to one at least for a couple hours? It doesn't have to be for life.
Yes.
What is the goal of those 2 hours? Because that might help.
Yeah.
No, like, yeah, there's definitely half of these I would like to go to.
So good question. I think there's a couple options. The first is if you feel like, you know, you get in a group and you feel like you have the momentum and you know what to do next and you want to spend the time just working on the deliverable, I think that that's one option. I think the other option, and we have some handouts to help facilitate this, is if folks want to spend a little bit of time figuring out what is the vision and goal for the deliverable? What is the right work plan? What resources would you need to move it forward and do a little bit of that planning? I think that's the other option, and we can pass around some of these sort of templates for how you might approach that. So I think it's sort of in that sense that you choose your own adventure, but it's depending on sort of where the group feels like they can make the most progress. Is that helpful? Peter,
I have a question, which is, I know we have some people, even late in the evening in UK or on the phone. I guess we're turning off the Zoom.
Great question. We've been busily figuring that out, and so this Yvonne put into the Zoom group chat another Zoom link. So. This is the way we're going to do it, unfortunately, is that there's another Zoom link that has Zoom's breakout room functionality turned on. And so if you click on that Zoom link for those remote participants and put into chat which group you'd like to be a part of, we'll assign you to that group. And then at least one person in the breakout groups here will just need to bring their laptop and sign in, and we'll set that up so that we can have 6 simultaneous conversations going, basically.
Do we know if any of the remaining remote people want to do that?
Yeah. Or unknown. That is the option available.
Okay.
No pressure to those remote. If you don't want to join, I think we're going to be muting the main Zoom conversation shortly. So if you are interested, please jump into this other Zoom link. It's also, I added it to the wiki agenda.
Thank you. I'd like to offer up that the last one that I was just talking about, the case study of OCW, unless somebody really, really, really wanted to jump in and work on
on that with me right now. I might set that aside because I think it's going to draw on some of the other conversations.
I really want to work on that with you.
But here?
Well, we can do both at the same time.
Probably not both.
I mean, yeah. We can do one after the other.
So let's do a show of hands by group just to make sure we have at least a couple people for each and we don't have everyone in one. I think if we have more than, say, five or six in one group, we can subdivide further. And if we have fewer than two, we might encourage you to reassign to another one.
It's like caucusing in Iowa, right?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Except we promised to be the So for the first deliverable, the Declaration of Principles, define winning.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone like to work on that one? Okay, find your people. So you're five there. You guys make eye contact. Okay. The Sustainable Education Goals or the SDGs for Education.
I would like to do that one unless there's a move to do the OCW case study.
And the Jeff, were you in that one as well? Or were you? No. No.
No. I might be by myself.
No, I think Jamie and Willem are with
the SDGs one, number two.
Representing the rest of the world. Yeah.
So the third one is the Landscape Analysis of Orgs and Communities of Practice.
Politics is cool.
I raised my hand more than once.
That's okay.
Okay.
It's on you. Preparing case studies of institutional consortia. Okay. Claudia, are you going to be in that? Or are you not raising your hand?
We can reassign it. It's like the Iowa caucus. We don't count the 15% threshold, so we will reassign ourselves.
Okay. The conducting experiments, applying for licenses to open educational resources. Okay. And then completing a case study on the future. We've removed that one from consideration.
But we can collaborate with that offline, I suppose. But that's what I was most interested in contributing to.
Yeah. Well, we have over two and a half hours here for breakouts,
yeah.
And I wonder if maybe we might carve the time up into two parts today or something.
Stage it.
Yeah.
So look, we are going to trust this group to self-organize here. It's a risky proposition, but we will be available if people feel stuck. Like. There's a group that doesn't seem to be coalescing. So you hopefully made eye contact with the other people who said they were interested in those things. So I'm gonna just open it up, let you all cluster. Lisa, you raised your hands multiple times. Now you're gonna have to make a choice.
Are we in this room?
Yeah, in this room for now, but then we can spread out to outside. And
we have those five beautiful easels.
Yes.
Post-it things and Sharpies.
Markers.
We have lots of supplies.
Fables, Rancasters.
And I will let you know if any of the remote folks take us up on the offer and jump into one of these. Can I just take it, Yvonne or Diana? I think you're the only two who are left. Either of you interested in joining one of these groups? You're muted, but
they're both muted. Yeah.
Okay.
Hi, this is Diana. I'd love to join the education group if there's still room.
The Sustainable Education Goals or the?
Yes.
Okay.
Great.
Open education anyway.
All right, so split up and I will find that group to make sure that someone in that group that Diana's in has a laptop and is all set up on that.
Thank you.
Those are big things.